Sache. Es geht um das Black Boot Bootcamp. Wir haben jetzt wirklich nur noch wenige Wochen Zeit, bis es losgeht. Die letzten Plätze gibt es noch, nur noch ein ganz paar. Denn beim Black Boot Bootcamp geht es darum, dass wir in 2 Tagen alles das erarbeiten, was ihr im Unternehmen braucht, um New Work und Digitalprojekte voranzutreiben. Die sind häufig nämlich wirklich zerstreut. Manchmal in der IT, manchmal HR, manchmal im Change Management. Und bei uns geht es im Kern darum, wie wollen wir in Zukunft zusammenarbeiten? Wie sorgen wir dafür, dass die operativen Prozesse aus einem Guss kommen? Alles, was es dazu braucht, machen wir im Black Boot Bootcamp über Tools, über Kultur, über People, über Workspace. Es gibt Impulse, unter anderem von Michael und mir. Es gibt Workshops. Wir sind in 2 sehr coolen Locations von unseren Partnern Design Offices und Vitra. Also es lohnt sich, da mal reinzuschauen. Es gibt sehr viel Information dazu auf der Seite blackboat.com/bootcamp. Guckt rein, sehr viel von den Podcast-Zuhörern sind schon angemeldet. Also insofern auch mal eine Gelegenheit, sich zu treffen. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit der Folge. Welcome to the On the Way to New Work podcast with
Michael Trautmann
and Christoph Magnussen. And this is English again because we're still in New York City and we have the chance to meet Keith Pepper, VP Human Resources at Outbrain. So thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming. You picked a good week to be in New York.
Definitely. Absolutely. It's another sunny day. Luckily, we're inside for the podcast. We will be outside later today for
get some sun. Yeah.
Get some sun. So, yeah, thanks for having us at the office. So give us a bit insight in like who you are and what Outbrain is, because not everyone will know that by heart.
Yeah, so sure. Let me start with Outbrain. So Outbrain is the world's largest premium content discovery platform. What we do is we connect marketers to their target audience. And we do that by helping publishers monetize their online presence or their digital presence. So web, mobile, apps. And they do that through content recommendations or content discovery. So when you're reading an article, for example, on CNN here in the States or ESPN or any of the Condé Nast sites, if you're reading an article around that article or within that article will be contextually relevant recommendations for you. And those may come from other publishers, or they may come from marketers who are trying to connect to a target audience. And we do it through a CPC model, and we then share that what the marketers pay us with publishers. And so what we're doing is helping to sustain quality journalism and really give publishers another revenue stream in addition to the other subscription or display ads that they have.
And Outbrain is based in Israel and the States, like you founded in Israel?
Yep. So we were founded here, and we're a U.S. corporation. Mm-hmm. This is our headquarters. So our CEO and our co-CEO and our CFO sit here in New York. We have an Israeli heritage. So our R&D team, most of our product team, our other co-founder are all sitting in Netanya, which is a town just outside of Tel Aviv in Israel. So that's our biggest office, and in sort of a co-headquarter situation. And we have 16 offices around the world, including 2 in Germany, 1 in Munich, and 1 in Cologne.
So you told us a little bit about yourself, like the journey from different companies, what you did before. So what's your story?
So my story in getting to where I am today has been almost 20 years. So I started my internet career 20 years ago when I moved to New York and working for a company called Jupiter Research, which has morphed over the years and now is basically part of Forrester Research. Mm-hmm. So if you know that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I started in international sales, having 0 experience in 1999 when anyone walking in off the street could get hired working in the first dot-com bubble, which most of my colleagues around here don't know about, but it was quite a time in New York. And really, I walked in off the street and interviewed, had no experience, and told the person interviewing me at the time, I said, 6 months ago, I was working in a psychiatric hospital, which is true. I'd come from postgraduate work, working in the mental health field. And he said, "That's cool." He goes, 6 months ago, I was a basketball coach and hired me on the spot and was my boss and my mentor, still my mentor for many years to come. So we worked together at 2 companies. So after Jupiter, I went to a company called Hitwise, which is a web measurement company that was founded in Melbourne, Australia. When they expanded to the US, a couple of us from the Jupiter team joined that team, and we grew that business and sold it to Experian, which is a large global marketing services and credit services company. So I have experience working in global companies of a bunch of different sizes. Been in Outbrain now for 3 years. When I joined was to work with the account management teams. So across both sides of our business, the marketer side, which is where we work with advertisers, as well as the publisher side, where we work with the world's leading publishers. And so was responsible for account management here in the US. And then just over the course of the company evolving the last couple of years, went back to 20 plus years ago to my my experience in education and psychology, and went into the HR. There was an opening in the leadership for HR here. So what many companies now refer to as people operations, and employee, everything from recruiting to onboarding of employees to employee experience. Retention in this market is incredibly important. So that's what I'm doing now, is looking after HR for the US.
Awesome, cool. Because that's the topic.
We're talking about. So we explained this to you in the beginning. What brought us to this new work topic? We are very much interested to get insights from your market. So. Maybe we start where we are here. You described a very special area where your office is. It's not the typical Madison Avenue where my competitors are sitting and even my mother company, WPP, is sitting. Where are we here?
Yeah, so
where are your neighbors?
We're in Greenwich Village. So we're in between Union Square and the West Village. This is really the heart of Greenwich Village. We're a few blocks from Washington Square Park, which is where NYU is based. We're actually in a building that's owned by the New School, which is a liberal arts university here in the city of New York. It's a little bit less well known than NYU or Columbia in New York, but it's a pretty progressive and quite a good university. So we're in the middle of a residential street. There aren't many tall, super tall buildings around here, as you guys noticed. So. It's cool. We're at the intersection of downtown, and we're really close to Union Square. I think for our workforce, being here it's really easy because the transit is super easy. There's a huge subway station at Union Square. We're very close to the West Side, where all the trains. We have a bunch of folks that live in Brooklyn. We have people that live, even if they live in Long Island or outside of the city, it's easy to get everywhere. So. We love being here. It's not a very fancy building, but it's fun and unique. And it's always interesting to me when we interview people that come in, if they're coming having interviewed at some hot startups that may have super flashy offices. They may look around. There's a little bit of grit on the walls, but I think people like it. And then folks that come in. And when our lawyers come, or when our accountants who are, when they come by in their suits, they're always like, oh, this is so cool. What a cool it feels like a .com office. If you hadn't worked in a startup, this is what it would look like. So we like it. We like it. I would like it a lot more if a few things didn't break as much as they break, but that's part of being in a grittier building. So, we're really happy where we are, and, the location's great, it's been fun. It's a little hard to find a quiet space, as you guys saw, trying to find this room to do.
It's very nice. Maybe we tell this. We are you name your conference rooms.
Yeah, so we named for the first 4 years. I think we were in this space. All the conference rooms were named for Seinfeld characters after the show. So our co-founder Yaron is a big Seinfeld fan. As am I. I think as our workforce has gotten progressively younger, many of them were not quite as familiar with the Seinfeld characters. And so last year we did a little internal committee, and one of the committees was in charge of kind of decorating and getting the conference rooms redone. So believe it or not, this has been redone, but so we named them after where all of our offices are, and they go in size, in terms of how big we are revenue-wise in those countries. And so that's what we have throughout the office now is all the conferences are named for countries where we have offices.
We're sitting in Germany.
Yeah.
We are sitting in Germany, and I won't tell you how big or small Germany is compared to other conferences.
Yeah, that's not our topic. So how would you describe Outbrain's culture? I mean, it's for us, it's very, very fascinating to see a company where there is a big portion of your people is sitting in Israel and big portion is sitting in the US and you are international. So how you manage to create, is that one, well, first question, is there one culture? How does it look like? How you deal with this different cultures?
Yeah, I mean, we have a word that we use, which is outbrainy. So we look for people that are outbrainy. And how do we describe that? It's going to be, I think, maybe difficult to put into words. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, when, and people obviously do leave, you know, we often hear that there's something magical about the culture here. It is at times intense. It is in times because we're in New York, because we're in ad tech, because we're in a competitive market, because you know, because of our different cultures coming together, whether that's the German culture with the Israeli culture, with the Aussies who may be a little bit more laid back, all of that comes together, and so it creates at times, you know, very intense culture. But I think that we really have a group of folks that, you know, at the end of the day, everyone's on the same team and everyone's rooting for each other. Everyone's really looking out for each other. And we're trying to create a culture. And a lot of what I talk about is aspirational, but, you know, being in HR and recruiting, I'll hope to be aspirational in that we're looking to, you know, to really bring in people that want to do great things with ad tech and with what we're doing around the content discovery space and truly believe that what we're doing is going to help the publishing industry, which is under tremendous pressure, but also that want to grow in their careers and that want to, you know, that maybe at the beginning of their career, but looking to do different things. I think I'm a good example, and I can point to others of that. Yaron, our CEO, is really, you know, he likes to go against the grain, and he's, I'll say this, I'm on tape, he's super smart, and he created this space, and he does that by taking people out of their comfort zone. And taking folks, and we have a lot of people that we can point to that have come from, you know, account management and are now in product roles. Or we take people that maybe, you know, came from doing support type roles and are now in marketing or in technical support. So there's really a culture of that you can make your own way. And a lot of that comes from, I think, being an Israeli company, and that there's a culture, certainly in Israel, and we see that throughout the Israeli startup community, that you really got to dive in and do things. And, you know, there's not going to be a lot of people sitting back waiting for, you may not always get asked, you know, if you sit around waiting for someone to tap you on the shoulder to do something, you might be sitting for a long time, but there is much more openness to really stepping up and saying, I'm going to help do this, and I want to take people along with me. So I hope that that's what we, you know, the culture that we want to create. I know it is, but I hope that's what we've created for people. So hopefully that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Definitely. What I would be interested in, because when the first dot-com bubble bursted, or when it grew bigger, 98, 99, for me it was normal in the schoolyard that every day like five companies would go. It would make an IPO, go on the stock market, trade stocks and stuff like that. So I saw that, but I have no idea of like how work changed from back then to like how it's today. Like, at least I have a theoretical idea, but like not this dots I could connect. What's your experience on the journey the last 20 years in that?
So back then we had fax machines, so that was
these are the things where you like press numbers.
I show this later to you.
Yeah, okay.
All the contracts that come in over fax machines. Now I do them all in DocuSign on my phone. So I think
many people I'm sort of joking, don't, still but, don't know DocuSign. They should know.
There's a plug for DocuSign. We do a lot with that. It's an amazing product. I mean, I do think that's one of the things is certainly the technology has improved so much that people are so much more mobile. you know, you really can work from anywhere. So much of what we do now is over video. So, you know, people could be, you know, in certainly in airports, but anywhere, you know, doing video calls with a colleague. So you get a chance to really connect, I think, really closely with people around the world. And the cost of being, the cost of starting up a business now is so much less than I think it probably was back then, just because of the cost of data and data storage and things like AWS and web hosting, et cetera. And I guess that people learned a lot of lessons back then. We'll see if, you know, I think that we're in a much more sustainable economy. I'm not a VC, I'm not an economist, but it feels like we're in much more sustainable, you know, rational businesses that are doing better. I mean, back then it was, you know, you see fewer companies going public now, because I think back then so many hard lessons were learned. So
workforce wise, like when you look at people changing jobs frequency, like we look a lot into like new ways of working, and many people always connect that to millennials not being a good fit for certain companies because they're so picky. And like, is that, like, you have certainly your own culture, but is that something you've seen, or how did that change? Or
yeah, I think that that's all real. I mean, I think that the people are more willing to leave jobs sooner than they were, certainly in my parents' generation and even my peers. So that's certainly a thing. And I think that millennials come in to the workforce with a much better sense of what else. They're just so much more exposed to things in the world and see so many more things. And they're exposed to so many people that may be different than they are, and so they have different experiences, which to me is amazing. I mean, I wish if someone gave me advice going back to the, you know, to the 20-year-old or even 18-year-old before I went to university, you know, me, the advice would be to travel and get out of your comfort zone. You know, you don't have to decide what you want to do when you're 18. Go see the world. I mean, I didn't come into any sort of independent thinking personally until I traveled, which was after I went to university. You know, until I got a backpack and got a Eurorail pass, and you know, went throughout Europe and saw more of the world and spent time with different people, and then ended up after that trip through Europe, ended up living in Israel for almost a year, and getting exposed again to different culture, different people. And to me, that opened my eyes. So I think that millennials come into it, whether they've traveled or not, I don't always know, but they at least have, because of connectivity and because of, trying not to say the phrase because of the internet, but because of the internet, people just see like the world has shrunk, right? So there's so much more experience, and they know that different things are out there. So I think that we have to adapt what we do to them, not force them to tuck in their shirts and, you know, wear a collared shirt and those kind of things that when I was, you know, starting my first jobs, that's what happened. Like, that was the deal. I mean, one of my first internet jobs, we had to wear a suit and tie every day because that's what my boss knew. I mean, he grew up in Brooks Brothers, which is a traditional American clother. I mean, he would go to the, you know, he wouldn't go out to get the newspaper in the morning without having a suit and tie on. So we did that. And finally we learned a lesson because we were having a hard time recruiting and people. And I said, hey, we gotta change what we're doing. Like, we're not going to change an entire generation. I hate making sweeping stereotypes, but you know, so I think it's forcing us to be better. It's forcing us to confront things that aren't always comfortable for us to confront, around opportunities and, you know, and issues of diversity on many different levels. And so those are conversations that we're having that businesses didn't have, you know, however many years ago, especially during the first .com period. So.
We've seen some of the stuff you showed to us, like product teams. We talked about like video conferencing, all that stuff. Like, what are the tools you guys work with here to like hold everyone together, and how consequently do you use these?
Yeah, so I don't know how different they'll be than others. I mean, video is a big one. Whether it's Google Hangouts or we use a system called Video. I'm not sure if this is when I start to mention brand names. I mean, we use things like Zoom conferencing.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff happens on Google Hangouts or you know Google Chat. There's a lot of stuff that happens on WhatsApp. I mean this is a big difference, I think, in 20 years ago and now, is that the cost of communicating to other people. I mean, when I first started at Jupiter, I was selling to companies in emerging markets around the world. So I was selling to companies in India and Singapore and in Argentina and in parts of Africa. And I mean, I used to have a cord going across my apartment to my laptop to plug in, because that was the only way to do it, to get connectivity. You know, now we're talking for free. I'm walking to the subway in the morning through the park in Brooklyn, and I'm talking on the phone for free to my colleague in Paris or in Tel Aviv. And so WhatsApp is certainly a big one that people use. But there's really there's nothing better than face-to-face meetings. And so we try as much. I mean, since we've been sitting here, I've seen three people from Israel walk by, that are here this week meeting with their colleagues that they work with. So we try to do that as much as we can, but certainly the technologies that we're using, probably are similar to other companies, whether it's Salesforce to help our sales team and our support team, or it's HipChat or Slack or these different communication tools. There's a lot. I mean, it would be nice to have an app that consolidated my text messages with my WhatsApp, with my Google Hangouts. Maybe there is, but there's a lot.
Yeah. So when you talk about like especially face to face, how about remote work in a company that is that young? Like, is it something you believe in, or you say like, no, it's possible, but just case wise? Or
yeah, it's going to get myself, this will get me into trouble if anything, but we have folks that work remotely permanently. So we have people that are scattered around. We have, you know, someone that works from home in LA. We have someone that works from home in Colorado, and we have people that are in Atlanta that are kind of embedded with our clients and working from home there. I mean, we try to have a flexible environment. I think there's different teams that really need to be with each other more. One of the interesting things I think about New York, and this may translate to other big cities around the world, is a lot of people in New York don't have the space to work from home. Right? This is true. I know you just came from WeWork, which is why, you know, one of the many reasons that they're doing so well is, you know, my family that lives in Atlanta has, you know, and my friends, you know, everyone's got a huge house with extra bedrooms and home offices, et cetera. In New York, you kind of want to get out of your apartment. So it's not, we don't have a tremendous amount of people that want to work from home all the time, just because it's not really that conducive. And, you know, I think going back to the culture, like we try to create a culture here, and we've, we've got an amazing office manager in New York. We have an amazing office manager in Munich and even other places around the world. Certainly our Israel office has a great sense of community. So people want to come in and spend time, but that doesn't mean if you have, you know, if there's something that's going on, you can, you know, work. We try to have a culture where you can work with your manager to, you know, to make reasonable arrangements. We're heading in now to the summer season here in New York, and you know, in the media world, certainly things, you know, slow down a little bit on Fridays. And you guys will, if you're here this Friday before a long weekend, you know, it'll be quieter in ad agencies and media companies. So we give people the flexibility. We have a summer Friday policy, which a lot of agencies and media companies do, which is a nice perk for folks, but you know, it's people, we try to hire people that get their work done, and we don't watch the clock as much.
What does it mean, Friday summer policy, that you can leave it, what, at 12? Or?
Yeah, well, people do it in a lot of different flavors. Ours is that we give people 3 Fridays between this weekend, which is Memorial Day, and Labor Day, which is the end of the summer season.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
So you can take off 3 Fridays as long as your work is covered, your team. If you're client-facing, obviously, you make sure that your clients are covered and your manager knows. And so we give people that flexibility, which is kind of it's pretty common in agencies. And there's different ways people do it. Sometimes they let people leave at 1 o'clock every Friday. There's different ways. So.
Gleich geht's weiter mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast. Hier kommt der ganz kurze Werbeblock. Und worum geht's? Wir haben was Neues. Und zwar haben wir ja sehr viel Erfahrung gemacht bei Blackboard und dem YouTube-Channel, den wir betreiben, unter meinem Namen, Christoph Magnussen, mit Videoproduktion in den letzten 3 Jahren. Und wir haben jetzt ein Workshop-Format ausgearbeitet, wo wir unseren Kunden beibringen, wie man diese ganze Erfahrung aus Beratung, Videoproduktion, Podcast und so weiter nutzen kann, um die Kommunikation intern, also firmenintern, aufs nächste Level zu bringen. Also anstatt lustige E-Mails zu schreiben, was jetzt alles gerade passiert in der Transformation oder Flyer, ich will niemandem zu nahe treten, aber das ist vielleicht nicht immer das richtige Medium, denn nicht jeder von uns ist Stephen King, um einen Roman in einer E-Mail zu schreiben, kann man eben Videos nutzen oder Podcasts nutzen, um das Ganze auf eine sehr attraktive Art und Weise intern zu kommunizieren. Das machen wir im Content Creation Program von Blackboard und das Ganze findet ihr unter blackboard.com/contentcreation. Guckt euch das mal an. Wir haben ein Video dazu gemacht mit einem unserer Kunden, ein bisschen geteilt, wie das Ganze abläuft. Ein langer Text, dass man sich durchlesen kann, was es alles gibt. Und ja, wer möchte, kann sich da gerne anmelden. Wir melden uns dann und finden einen Termin und dann geht's los. Also, viel Spaß.
Other, like, I know from one co-founder, the Israeli culture, especially around military culture, they're very structured, very clear in communicating. Is there anything that maybe below the line is there in terms of meetings? We always look into meetings, how meetings are done, and people say, yeah, we do it this way, that way. Are there any interesting things you can share where you say, hey, this is how we do it and that works quite well and other folks could adapt it?
Yeah, so I mean, I think like a lot of companies, we feel, or a lot of us feel like our meeting culture has gotten kind of out of control. So for one, I encourage my teams that I've managed in the past and always is don't wait for a meeting to address something. So let's try to address things as quickly as we can and make sure that we're, you know, if something comes up, there's a tendency, I think, for people to say like, hey, I'll set a meeting when it could really be solved in in one conversation or a short email. So we've recently looked at this and we've tried to implement some, you know, guidelines around it. One of which is with rare exceptions, we try to set all of our meetings for 30 minutes and not for an hour.
Oh, wow. That's
so
good.
Mm-hmm. There's a way in your Google Calendar to set the default meeting to 30 minutes. And so we encourage people, to do that. And then there's the thing that I think, you know, as I'm looking at my phone as we're talking, although I'm reading something specific, you know, it's really hard for people to unplug. There was a great article in the Wall Street Journal last week, which I'll share with you after, where, you know, basically the boss just lost it of like people being on their phones and on their laptops in meetings. So if you're calling, if something's important enough to have a meeting about, it's important enough for you to close your laptop, to put away your phone, and to really be present. So we're trying to enforce that as well. And then, you know, things like making sure that there's an agenda for every meeting and that there's clear follow-ups. If those things aren't happening, then there probably doesn't need to be need to be a meeting. So again, these are aspirational. I don't think we're there yet, but we're really looking to make that happen, because it's the meeting culture has felt like it had gotten kind of out of control.
Yeah.
How about the transparency when it comes to collaborating, sharing? You mentioned Slack, you mentioned HipChat. These are tools that are meant to be open communication tools. You communicate in channels other than email, where you usually to like one-on-ones? Like how is that dealt with here?
So we're not a poster child for Slack. In fact, we use HipChat corporately. So in case our IT team is listening, we are a HipChat company, and we use all their entire suite of tools. So I think that the technology teams use it more than some of the sales teams certainly use it.
Because they really have to
constantly in, you know, they logistically they've got two screens. I think they're always like collaborating on these in that way, whereas the sales teams we're probably more reliant on Google Chat. I know some teams have been trying out Slack and some tests. So if the Slack sales folks are listening, keep calling, because I think that you know, people want to try more stuff. But we, you know, we're probably still more of an email culture than some other companies. But I don't know. We don't know how to change that yet, but
do you feels want to, like, it could be interesting. Yeah, do you want to change it, or you say like, hey, you know, we found a way how it works?
You know, it's kind of like to-do lists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what you guys, I should turn the table and how do you take care of your to-do lists? I know I'm constantly changing and frequently go back to pen and paper or sticky notes on my computer. So I think it's work, and we're just always testing different ways. I mean, I think people have, if you're a texter, you're going to keep texting, and it's hard to get you to use WhatsApp. If you're a WhatsApper, you're constantly using WhatsApp. If you're Google Chat, you know, that you're doing that. And I think sometimes people feel like if they send me a message on Google Hangouts and I don't answer, they'll WhatsApp me, and then they'll hip chat me, not knowing that it's all going the same place. And so I don't know that that's a huge priority to change. That's, but
it's interesting. We had last podcast we did. So yesterday we were at Harry's, the shaving company.
I'm a customer.
Oh, you're a customer. Yeah. We really love the brand. We love the people.
Great brand.
And we had, we talked to your colleague at Harry's, Rach, a very, very nice, young, energetic, passionate lady. And she said one of her founders, Andy, said, I don't think it's his original quote, but he used it. It says, an email inbox is like a to-do list that someone else did for you. I said, well, that is the case, and it drives your day if you don't find ways to control it. And that's what I believe.
The tyranny of email. I mean, coming from a sales background, I especially appreciate this. Of like, just because you send an email doesn't mean that I have to respond to it. And you know, if you're pitching someone as a potential customer, you know, you got to try a lot of different ways to get their attention. And sometimes, you know, just sending an email, like you got to follow up with a letter or back in the day, a fax or, you know, a package or in person. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's much different internally. And we have a lot of, you know, because of the geographic, because of some of the, you know, the tyranny of distance and time zones, you know, there are times when someone may not reply as quickly as we want them to internally. And I've said to people this week, like, did you pick up the phone and, you know, and call them? Or are you aware of their different time zones? So we need to be cognizant of all of that, because you sent me an email, it doesn't make it a huge priority for me. And there's a lot of email volume that goes around.
Another interesting thing we've learned today was with a guy from Facebook. He's leading the whole advertising practice at Facebook, and he says, well, he really very carefully is analyzing in his team, in his leadership team, how they like to communicate, and he really tries to find out: is he an email guy? Is he a WhatsApp guy? Is he a Facebook workplace guy? So really trying to find out what is the best way. I mean, as a leadership member of the leadership team, I think it's very brave to act like this, to say, I don't want to force them into anything. I want to learn where can I reach them best. Interesting
thing as well. I think we have to adapt both weighs on that, right? Yeah. So it's you know, as executives here, we have to understand how our workforce wants to communicate. So that's why things like maybe Facebook Workplace or Slack that we need to be open to investigating. And the same way goes for the team communicating to our executives. And I think that I've been spending some time working with someone internally on helping them present to their colleagues. And they don't come from a sales background. They don't come from necessarily a presentation background, but they need to communicate some information, and they have an engineering background. So they, you know, it was super detailed, and, you know, we had a great conversation about, you know, here's basically where you lost the person on the third slide, which was way too in depth. And I think that they were very receptive and interested in learning how to communicate to the executives that they hadn't done. So it goes both ways. As executives, we have to learn how to communicate and be transparent with how we communicate to the teams. And it's also worthwhile that, you know, folks understand if I'm going to pitch something to the executive team, like what's the right way to do it so that it gets the reception that I may want.
You mentioned Salesforce as one tool. So you worked in sales as well. So what is your experience? Is a tool without a CRM culture really sensible, or do you think this is what Christoph always tells me? You need to have a CRM culture before you install a powerful tool like Salesforce. So how you educate your people? Because I know you have lots of clients around the globe. And
yeah, it absolutely. Like, if you don't use Salesforce, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's only as good as the information that your salespeople put in. So it's we didn't have it when I first got here, and we've gotten much better. I mean, we had Salesforce, but we didn't, you know, no one used it properly. I mean, if you went in and typed in a company, you know, there may be 50 different instances of that company that were in there, and it was impossible to find any useful information. So we've gotten much, much better. And we're growing that team. So if anyone's listening that wants to become a Salesforce project manager, please reach out, because we're looking to grow the team. But we've invested a lot in the tools, into the tool, and making sure that our sales team and account team, and now our support, our customer support team uses it as well. So it's a critical part of our business now. But I agree. I think with what Christoph said is that if you don't have the culture and you don't invest in keeping Salesforce up to date, it's useless.
Very, very useless. Yeah. And do you like use an onboarding process or something like to bring people up to speed and culture wise on board? Like, is that something you guys do very structurally, or is it more happening like learning on the job?
So when we onboard employees, yeah. So we have, I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, it's never as good as I want it to be, but I think it's pretty good. Like, I'm probably a little too hard on ourselves. We have a pretty robust online training platform that we've built out internally. So we have a person that's dedicated to keeping that up to date. Everyone pitches in with their specific areas of expertise to train new folks. So I think that we do an okay job. I think we can always, something that there will never be a finish line in how good we are at training people. But the other thing that makes that, you know, really, really dynamic is that the product is constantly changing, and we're always rolling out new tools. The product is evolving. So there's new competitors that are, coming into the market. So it's not the onboarding is just one piece of that journey that we need to, continue to keep people educated and like do that, make that training really a continuing education process.
What do you expect in the next years will be the biggest factor for your business? Is it artificial intelligence? Is it something you really have to deal with, your tech people in Israel, or what is the topic of the next years for you, for your business?
So I'm not the product expert, so
but you have to hire them.
This is going to go. I don't want to go too far on the record with going in depth with this. I mean, I think that, you know, we're looking at ways to, you know, continue. At the end of the day, what makes our business go around is being able to present interesting, relevant content and, you know, native advertising to consumers, and so keeping them engaged is really the name of our game, because we only get paid when people engage with content or when they click on something, right? So we're not, if you go to a page on CNN and you never click on an Outbrain recommendation, we don't make any money. So we're always looking for ways to make the products and the brands and the content that we're promoting more interesting to readers, or more relevant to readers. So I think that that's the thing, whether that's around video or mobile or both, and you know, it's probably all of those things. That's what the challenge is. And so I don't know, I wouldn't be the best person to answer how AI plays into that. But we, you know, that's when we host this from Israel, you'll chat with the team there, and they'll
cool.
they'll give you more insight on that.
Maybe we talk a little bit about your personal working style. Do you have any routines? How you come into your day? How do you structure your day? How do you get inspiration? So how are you working personally?
Yeah, so I am in a new role for me, as you know. So it's been about 6 months, maybe a little bit longer, since I've been in the HR world. So the learning
curve, which
is
somehow out of your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I had lunch today with a former colleague, who's a CRO of an ad tech data company, and you know, I told him this is the biggest learning curve, you know, for me. I mean, it's you know, you can kind of fake it with clients, right? You can get by and shake hands and smile and take people out and do things. But, you know, now I feel a tremendous sense of responsibility for our people, and our people are the most important asset that we have, hands down. And the market is very competitive, especially here in New York and in places like San Francisco and London and in for sure in Tel Aviv. The market's very competitive. So I feel a tremendous sense of responsibility, as do my colleagues on the HR team, to make Outbrain, you know, the best place to work in the world. And, you know, that's a tall order. And I think that, you know, so that's what gets me going. And it's even harder for me because it's a learning curve. I mean, I had to learn the blocking and tackling, as we say in the U.S. It's a gridiron, or American football term. I had to learn the blocking and tackling, and still do, of HR. Right? Like the first couple of months I was in the job, you know, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and like, did I forget, you know, many things that I won't tell you. And so you learn that, and that's been the hardest part for me. So keeping that education going, and, you know, and keeping myself in check. And I mean, I hope that, you know, I'm someone that always wants to learn, and is not ever someone that thinks they have to have all the answers, as you can tell from this conversation. So that motivation of like climbing that hill of learning is something that keeps me going.
Is there any specific source that you use for inspiration or to keep learning? Like, what is your favorite channel, let's say?
So TV channel or radio? So I grew up in radio. I'm a radio. So as everyone, if anyone internally is listening, they'll know that I'm a big public radio person. So
yeah. Cool.
I spend a lot of my, almost all of my time listening to NPR, and whether it's news or music. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of inspiration, especially when I tend to be a news junkie, mm-hmm. and grew up that way. I think when things get more and more stressful in the world or in my life, I turn to music more. So I listen mm-hmm. less to the news. Mm-hmm. If it was up to me, I would read you know, two or three newspapers every day. I still get newspaper delivered here. I try not to do that as much anymore. It's a little less.
That's true. I saw
it. It's a little bit more stressful.
So the newspaper when we got here.
I had I was having a meeting with someone in my office recently, and they are much younger, and they pointed to the newspaper, and I made a comment of like, "Do you even, you know, some somewhat sarcastic comment?" And they said, "Oh yeah, we used to have that in my middle school civics class." So it's definitely a relic. I don't even know why I still get that delivered here, but since most of the days I've already read, by the time it comes, by the time I get to work in the morning, I've already read it all on my iPad. So my digest of what I take in is a lot of news. It's too much news given how the world has been the last couple of years. So it's kind of stressful, but you know, I'm trying to read. I do read my favorite email of the day, and I've unsubscribed from bunches. But my two favorite that I continue to read is the Word of the Day, which comes from Merriam-Webster, which is the mm-hmm. dictionary company. So I try and read that every day, and then the Harvard Business Review has a management tip of the day, which I find more often than not I'm forwarding around to someone on our team, because I find that to be really useful. And they're probably, I mean, the content that they create through HBR for someone like me that's getting up to speed has been really helpful. And, you know, I find them, even on social media, they're one of the few that I really engage with, and I'm constantly saving articles for her.
Yeah, they're amazing. They have, I don't know how this series is called, the 10 best reads or 10 must reads. Love it. So yeah. when we started this project, I started the 10 must reads on managing yourself. And when I read this, I said, well, shit, I should have read this 20 years earlier, because I really, just from reading this 10 amazing articles, I could see myself doing stupid things over stupid things over the last 10 years or 20 years.
We saw a lot of books when we entered your office, and the funny thing was, Michael then said, oh, you read a lot of good books, and you said,
I said, they come with the office, so it looks like I read a lot of books.
So you buy them first, he said. No, but
is there any book at which
you I have read most of a lot of them. I mean, I think that the so I just am almost finished with the Phil Knight biography, autobiography,
the Nike
founder, which has been great. I think that Laszlo Bock's book, which I somehow have two copies of now, has been has been somewhat of an inspiration. And he was an inspiration for me to even pursue this as a as a profession. I think that what he did at Google and how he reshaped the world of, you know, thinking about talent and, engagement is inspirational. And I think even his new company, which I'm, beginning to follow, is, I think is exciting. So that's certainly, one as well. And then you guys saw the Simon Sinek book, which I just refreshed because, of the chapter on working with millennials,
it's not his very famous book, Start With Why. You have the
Leaders Eat Last, you asked about the Israeli influence. It's actually, it comes from a Marine, a U.S. military reference, to leaders Eat Last. So, I mean, my favorite one, which is cheeky, someone here tipped me off to, is someone that worked in the Obama White House. That's up there, and the title of it is "Who Thought This Was a Good Idea," which is sort of anecdotes from her time there. So that's what I'm going to get into.
Interesting. So.
I saw it when we left, and I was like, okay, never heard of that one. But
it must have done okay because it just came out in paperback.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sharing,
this was amazing.
Thank you guys for coming by Outbrain, and thanks for wanting to hear our story and my story. I think it's thanks.
It's such a gift for us. Every time we meet new people and we have the chance in 45 minutes to really get a feeling for someone new. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks.